Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Divyani Chaturvedi, research analyst at ISAS, and I will be your host for today's episode. Food insecurity has remained amongst the gravest concerns in the world, wherein post-pandemic, the global food insecurity rose to 11.9%, with instances of undernutrition, malnutrition remaining higher in certain parts of the world, like Africa and South Asia. Although 2023 has witnessed certain incremental improvement and steps taken by the United Nations to create a roadmap for countries to ensure food security, however, recent COP28 negotiations depict that there is a long way to go, as international forums struggle to strengthen their agenda on issues surrounding food security, the food production, processing, distribution, and consumption processes have come under great scrutiny. To reflect on this issue further, joining us today is Dr. Pushpa Sharma, Visiting Senior Research Fellow at ISAS. Welcome, Dr. Sharma.
Thank you, Devyani.
So we hear about food security almost everywhere. Let us begin by me asking you about what is food security exactly, and is there a uniform understanding of food security?
Thank you, Divyani. I think this is a good question to begin with. Food security, actually, if we have a look at the different reports, we see that there might not be a uniform understanding of food security as such. We do hear about hunger, food security, undernourishment. And there are different ways of looking at these things. But there is also a definition of food security, which is well accepted. The FAO definition, which actually talks about food security in a comprehensive manner. It is not only about the availability of food, but it is also about access to food, about food utilization, and about stability. Now, what do these four dimensions mean? When we talk about the availability of food, we are talking about food production in the first place, right? There has to be available food in the market, or in at the household level, in the absence of a household or a country producing enough, then trade comes in the picture in terms of making the food available. So basically, it's production and trade when we are talking about food availability. But only food being available is not enough. People also should have access to the food that is there. So by access, we mean that if people are producing food by themselves in terms of self-production, then obviously there is access to food. But then in the case of those who don't produce themselves, the access dimension of food security means there has to be enough income for that food to be accessed. And access also means there has to be a fair distribution of food, whether that's in terms of the distribution country-wise, or distribution at the sub-regional level, or even at the household level. We know about gender inequality and then the different access to food by different sexes. So the access would mean distribution as well. The third dimension of food security is about utilization. Only having food is not enough. The food has to be of good quality. It has to be nutritious food. But more than that, if the utilization of food is not good, meaning that if people are not concerned about their health in terms of food ingestion, in terms of hygiene, in terms of sanitation, in terms of handling of food, then again, it doesn't make much sense just to have food, but utilizing it, the food is in a proper manner, is also essential. And the fourth dimension is about stability. When you talk about availability, you talk about access and utilization, there has to be stability in all the three dimensions. It is not that there is available food at one time and there isn't at the other, similarly with access and utilization. So when these four things are combined together, then that makes for food security is what the FAO definition says. And that is a proper and accepted understanding of food security. But yet, when we talk about or when we hear about food security, there are many different things and many different concepts that people are talking about. And sometimes we also find this confusion because people talk about different things, the reports talk about different things, and they are interpreted in many different ways. But when we have to look at food security, then perhaps taking this definition and taking these four dimensions together would be the good way to go about.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pushpa. I think one of the key aspects of the four dimensions that you mentioned is access. And as we looked at the year around and the Global Hunger Index, as well as the FAO report on state of food security and nutrition, I think both largely reflected on these aspects and dimensions across the globe. However, I think one thing that stirred a huge debate and controversy was how India rejected the findings of these reports, where I think one amongst the two reports stated that 71% of Indians do not have access to healthy, nutritious food. And this was one of the points of the debate. Of course, it has much more to it. So if you could reflect a little bit about on what was the issue and what are your views on this controversy?
Indeed, Devyani, there were two actually reports to which India has rejected the findings. The first one is the Global Hunger Index, as you rightly pointed out, and the other one is the FAO flagship report on the state of food security and nutrition. Now, to understand about what the controversy is, I think we first have to look at what these different reports talk about, what they have measured, and what is the controversy? What is it that India has rejected about? Now, first, to look at the Global Hunger Index, the Global Hunger Index actually tries to combine the different dimensions of food security and come up with a single index. That means what it does is it takes the prevalence of undernourishment, which measures the lack of caloric intake by people, so as one indicator. Similarly, it takes into consideration the stunting and wasting of children under 5 years of age. By stunting, we mean low height for the age, and by wasting, we mean low weight for height of children. And it also takes the child mortality, under five child mortality, also as an indicator. So the GHI combines all these into a single indicator and comes up with the level of hunger in different countries around the world, especially developing countries around the world. Now, what happened is in this Global Hunger Index, when it combined all these three different indicators in the latest report, India was shown to be not performing very well. Actually, its rank slipped further. And within South Asia, India has not been seen as a good performer. Basically, because of figures on child wasting, and also the figures on child mortality. So India says that the whole methodology of preparing the Global Hunger Index is wrong, because it basically takes the children's status, like stunting, wasting, mortality, as a heavy on the heavier side of the of all the indicators. And therefore, India said that this cannot be accepted. And I'll come to what these debates are a bit later. First, let's talk about what are the issues in the FAO report. Now, in the FAO report, the FAO report also takes these indicators, the three indicators that the GHI takes, that is the prevalence of undernourishment, which is the caloric intake, and also stunting and wasting. But it doesn't combine them all together. It treats them separately. Now, what happened with this report is, in the undernourishment data for India is something that, again, India rejected too. Because India said that this is based on an opinion poll of just 3,000 people in such a large country like India. So this cannot be accepted. And the other one, as you rightly pointed out, is the data on the affordability of healthy diet by the people. So what actually are the issues here? So now let's going back to the Global Hunger Index. Now, GHI actually is the only index, as far as I know, that takes child mortality also as an indicator. And the report says that the child mortality as an indicator has been taken because there is a study which shows that 45% of the deaths in children under the age of 5 can be accounted for the lack of food. So that is why the report has taken child mortality as one of the indicators, whereas the FAO and others, the other agencies which work on issues of food security, nutrition, they don't take for child mortality as an indicator. So an obvious question, is child mortality as a, is a right indicator to be taken? Is, I think, obviously a good question to be asked. But the thing is, if we drop child mortality, what we see is that child mortality, although is taken as an indicator, I think this does not explain much in terms of the, measurement of the index, because child mortality itself is not that high in many of the South Asian countries, including India. So now the issues with other data on the prevalence of undernourishment and stunting and wasting is again now comes back to the question of data quality, because these data actually are taken from national surveys. Now, whether one accepts those data or not is a different question, and perhaps the questions can be in terms of the data quality over there, because the index is based on those particular data. Now, if we accept the national survey data, then perhaps there isn't much to be concerned about the findings. But India very categorically says that, for example, the data on child wasting that the index has taken, and also the FAO flagship report has taken, is wrong, because India has developed the portion tracker, which is, I think, a very good initiative to track real-time, data on child undernutrition. And this portion tracker, the figure that this portion tracker gives in wasting is very different to what the national surveys have given. So I think the whole debate over here is about the source of data, the quality of data. And that is perhaps concerning, because if the source of data itself is wrong, the data from national surveys itself is wrong, then the whole idea of looking at these figures in a comparative manner becomes wrong in itself. So that is something perhaps that needs to be looked deeper and see whether the basic source of data, whether the quality itself is good or not. Now, if at the, for the time being, in the absence of, for example, India has the portion tracker, but the other countries might not have similar things. So in that context, when these national survey data are taken, and then these different indicators are calculated for the comparison, then perhaps we have to take them, although perhaps with a small grain of salt. But if we take these figures as what it is as of now, then I think there is something to be concerned about the state of food insecurity in South Asia, in countries such as in a country as big as India and also like Pakistan. But as I say, while on the one hand we have to be concerned about data, on the other hand, what we also have to be mindful of is that, as per my reading, this data on undernourishment, which the government of India says that is based on the opinion poll of just like 3,000 people, might not be right. Because as per my reading of the FAO report, it says that the prevalence of undernourishment is also calculated based on the data of national surveys and not this opinion poll. In fact, the data that comes out of this poll is not there in the report for India, because I think India rejected to these survey data and had asked the FAO not to include them in the report. So this number is not there in the report. So I think the numbers that have come out the opinion poll is not what has been used to calculate the data on undernourishment. So I think there are both sides to this controversy. There are some things which the government of India says is valid, whereas on the other, there might be things that are valid on the side of the reports themselves. So I think we have to look at them from the from the midpoint in terms of looking at the evidence on the ground that there are problems, and we have to identify what the real problems are. And the real problems that we see are basically the child nutrition levels, the stunting of children, the wasting of children, that is pulling the whole thing down, not only in India, but also in other South Asian countries.
Absolutely. I think thank you so much for laying out the landscape of this whole debate, and also I think giving us insight into what are the challenges that data collection, data surveying, and that interlinkages of a developing country vis-a-vis, its data architecture can hold out, especially when there are parallel indicative measures. And how should one be approaching international data collection processes as well? So I think thank you so much for also laying out what are the critical challenges that are faced by India. But zooming out a little bit more, when we look at South Asia, we still have extremely stark numbers when we look at how this region is severely affected due to food insecurity. From the numbers, we see that nearly 21% of the population remains undernourished, and more than 41% of children are underweight. Wasting, as you rightly mentioned, which means less weight for height amongst children up to 5 years, is 14.1%, while the global average is about 6.7%, which kind of indicates that there is a huge disparity in child nutrition, but also in an overall population which is undernourished. So, from that lens, what do you think is the state of food security in South Asian countries? And in the context of the impacts of climate change on agriculture, what might be the state of food security in South Asia in the future, given that climate change is inducing significant impact on the food cycle that this region has been used to? Of course, it's a global phenomena, but given that this region is highly dependent on agriculture, which has also been a key source of export for them, so there is a great economic stake here. What do you think would be the state of, food security in South Asia in the future?
Thank you, Devyani. That's a very good question, actually. And as you rightly mentioned, the numbers that we see, and as I also said earlier, in the absence of anything better, that gives us a comparative picture of the state of food security in South Asia vis-a-vis other countries or across the world, and also between the countries in South Asia itself. I think we have to rely on these global reports that we have at present. And looking at these numbers, as you rightly said, there is still grave concerns in terms of child undernutrition in South Asia. And that has been pulling the state of food insecurity also down. It's not that the South Asian countries have not been doing much in this regard. Actually, food security or getting people access to food used to be thought of from a welfare perspective until some years ago. But now countries have taken a rights-based approach to food. Actually, they have devised their legal mechanisms in a way that have established access to food as a right. So you see the countries like India or Nepal or Bangladesh, they have either established this right to food in their constitution itself or in their laws. But having them as a legal right itself, I think, doesn't make much sense until we see that progress on the ground itself, right? And these global reports, they don't show that these countries have been making much progress. Although there are some good progress made by relatively smaller countries, like if you look at Nepal, in Nepal the prevalence of undernourishment during 2000s, the early 2000s, the average of 2000 2002 used to be around 24%, which has gone down now to almost like 5.5%. So that's a good progress Nepal has made in terms of undernourishment. Similarly, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and other countries have made progress, but the thing that is concerning over here is the bigger countries which have not, of course, I'm like, it's not that there's no progress at all. There has been progress, but not as anticipated, right? When we look at the access to food, as we also talked about the access part earlier, and also the lack of affordability of people to healthy diets. Now again, when you talk about this lack of affordability of healthy diets, again we are talking of a different thing, and there is a different methodology that is used to calculate the cost of a healthy diet and the affordability of healthy diet. In the interest of time, I don't think we can go into the technical details of how it is done. One can always look at these reports, which also talks about the methodology. But what we find looking at that methodology is that having access to food is one thing, but what kind of food is a different matter altogether. Because when we look at the access figures, access to healthy diet figures, it's not only South Asia, but in the whole world itself, more than 3 billion people actually don't have adequate access to healthy diets. Here we are talking of healthy diets, not just food. And out of that 3 billion, more than 1 billion is in South Asia. And that is because of the overwhelming number in India itself, right? So, and why is this the case? I think obviously there are many different reasons why this is the case in South Asia, right? Because when we talk about the problem of food insecurity in South Asia, it brings a lot of different things as the reasons. One is, say, for example, the access to resources. There is inequality in the access of resources such as land, right? Unemployment is a big problem, which again, leads to the lack of income to access food, access healthy diet. Inequality of income itself is a problem. A lack of education and awareness in people in terms of handling food, in terms of maintaining that hygiene and sanitation is a problem. And as you also talked about climate change, now climate change is coming as a very big problem, right? And when we talk of food security and say malnutrition, it is not just undernutrition. Of course, undernutrition has been a problem for years. And it currently is, I think, the biggest problem when you look at the different dimensions of food security in South Asia. But again, there are also problems of overnutrition, like overweight, like obesity problems are also being seen across the world and also in South Asia, which also, I think, in some way reflects to the level of inequality in the region. So there are many things that need to be addressed in South Asia when it comes to addressing the whole issue of food security. But the bigger elephant in the room now, I think, is climate change. And we know South Asia has a reason. In all the countries of South Asia, climate change has been a very big problem. This region is affected disproportionately from climate change. Whether you look at the weather patterns, whether you look at erratic rainfall or floods in the one region, rainfall in the other, a good weather in one season, bad in the other, which again leads to inconsistency in food production and all. So what we find is that climate change really is going to be a very big problem in South Asia because of its effects on agriculture. And because most of the farmers in South Asia are smallholder farmers with very meager income and access to resources, I think climate change is going to impact these smallholder farmers very much. And because of the impact on the production of agriculture itself, it's going to have an impact, although, of course, on the whole population. Not just the impact of climate change on agriculture itself directly, but there might also be indirect impacts, as we see, because we have already started seeing that there have been climate refugees, and because of this climate change, the migration is also now going up. So if the rural to urban migration will go up, as we are seeing now because of climate change, then I think the problem of unemployment, especially the urban unemployment, might again rise further. This is also going to have a significant impact on food security of the people. So climate change, I think, is, of course, like as we discussed earlier, there are many different aspects of food security that is already concerning, and climate change looks to be adding to all this further, and that is something that the countries need to, gear up to address this problem.
Absolutely. I think climate change remains the overarching agenda on almost all global institutions. And I think so it's very important to understand for our listeners as well as for me from you on how do you think food security has fared when it comes to global climate change discussions and negotiations, especially given that it is a very key aspect and stakeholder in terms of the whole climate change scenario. At the same time, how do you think the recent UN climate change conference, the COP28, has taken up the issue of food security?
Indeed, Devyani, food security, I think, is taken up as a very important issue by countries around the world. And it does feature in these international negotiations and discussions, whether we talk about, trade negotiations or any other global, forums, and also in climate change, like the Paris Agreement, climate change also discuss about food security. But these international forums so far had not given dedicated attention to this big problem, if we look at it that way. If you look at the Paris Climate Agreement or the climate negotiations, climate change conferences, even after that, there were no dedicated attention given to food security. So I think one encouraging thing that we saw during COP 28 recently was that there was this dedicated discussion on food security, not food security as such, but agriculture, on food systems, which ultimately is about food security, right? And there was this declaration on sustainable agriculture, resilient food systems, and climate action at COP28, which was encouraging because this the session that was dedicated to agriculture actually discussed about the impacts that that climate change is making to agriculture, as well as the emissions that the agriculture has also been contributing to, which again contributes to climate change. So this was a session where the countries were discussing about how to break that cycle, how to make agriculture more productive, more conducive, more resilient, and also how to adapt to and mitigate the impacts of climate change on agriculture. So this declaration was, they came up with this declaration. So far, I think 159 countries have signed this declaration. But India has been reluctant to sign this declaration again. There might be many different reasons. I'm not sure what the reasons are why India declined to sign this declaration. One reason could be that, when you talk about climate change mitigation from agriculture, it might be challenging for countries in South Asia, including India, where we have many smallholder farmers. And changing agricultural practices might not be a thing that can be done very quick and fast. Countries might need time, countries might need resources. There have to be collaborative efforts to change the way agriculture is being done so that it contributes less to climate mitigation. But it is unfortunate that India has refrained from signing it because my personal view is that this declaration is not binding, right? It talks about individual responsibility, it talks about collective responsibility of countries in terms of addressing this whole issue of climate change and agriculture. And perhaps that would give countries a forum where they can come together, where they can discuss, and where they can, I think, especially developing countries can put forward their views and ask for the support from the developed countries in terms of what they can do to help them to reduce the whole, I wouldn't say conflict access, but the whole problem that agriculture has been facing from the from climate change impacts. But that I think it's not that India hasn't signed this now means everything is closed. Perhaps there will be opportunities for India to sign it again and then go further. But if there are other issues or if there are other concerns that I might not be aware of, then perhaps countries might be discussing it further. But it is encouraging. That's because to have a dedicated discussion on agriculture, which relates to the idea of food systems resilience and ultimately food security in the context of climate change, I think is a good start. And FAO has also, I think, come up with a roadmap now in the context of this whole discussion and declaration as well, in terms of what countries can do to go forward in terms of reducing the impact of climate change and having agriculture contribute less to GHG emissions. There is a roadmap that FAO has come up with, and I think that perhaps will take countries further in terms of making their contributions to the whole, nexus between climate change and agriculture.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has recently launched a roadmap, as you mentioned, for actions to governments that they can take to combat food security. This roadmap reflects on steps such as changing food taxes, introducing subsidies, improving harvesting and distribution food processes, etc. Do you think these kinds of interventions can help address food insecurity?
Indeed, Devyani, actually, this roadmap that you're talking about, the FAO Global Roadmap for Achieving SDG 2, which is a zero hunger, that is in the context of climate change. What this report, this roadmap actually shows is that the current problem with agriculture and climate change is due to the unsustainable, agri-food systems that are in place. And therefore, this roadmap actually tries to take countries for a transformative shift in agri-food systems. So it's very comprehensive. It identifies 10 domains where countries need to work on. And there are 120 actions actually. Not going into the details, but as you mentioned, there are these different issues like, changing food taxes and subsidies and, reducing food loss and wastage. There are many, many different actions that countries need to take. It's very comprehensive. If the countries would be able to, go along this path that their roadmap had shown, I think countries can do a lot better in terms of bringing about a shift in agri-food systems and ensuring that, there is food production that will be enough for the present population as well as the population of the future, while at the same time ensuring that agriculture doesn't contribute much to GHG emissions and hence to climate change. And that is the objective behind this roadmap. And FAO has only started this roadmap during this COP28, and it intends to take this further in the, COP, the next COP, as well as the COP30 in the two other COPs, from global to regional to national level actions. So I think this is a good initiative that has been taken with identification of these different actions. But the main challenge is in implementing these actions altogether, because as we discussed earlier as well, agriculture itself is very complex. And especially when we look at agriculture in developing countries, there are a lot of different issues, right from access to land to small, holder farmers engaged in agriculture, where it's things are quite difficult to change, as well as, industrial kind of agriculture that the developed countries have been practicing for long. So there are challenges, but step by step, if countries would be able to pick up on what has been identified in this roadmap, I think the world will do much better in terms of addressing the issue of both climate change as well as food security.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sharma. I think this really reflects very significantly on the resilience of food production as well as food supply systems in general and the ecosystem surrounding food security, which is one of the most significant points of discussion and agenda at global forums as well as domestically, not just restricted to India but also in South Asia, given that it is important that we sort of build towards an ecosystem that is resilient to climate change patterns so that we can continue to ensure food production. So I think these steps really shed significant light on what is going on, and I'm extremely thankful to you for reflecting on these and informing us about them. Thank you so much for joining us today. And as we progress with COP28 negotiations further over the year, I think we would be happy to have more discussions and learn more about food security from you.
Indeed, Devyani. I think we can discuss a lot more because food security is so complex and comprehensive that we are not able to cover everything in one single discussion. But I think we can take this further, and I'll be happy to discuss this further with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.